Welcome to ACC Nation. On board, Will Ogenin, Zave Yon, and I'm Jim Quist. The College Football Playoff Committee has a different landscape to look at after Saturday. Number 2 Ohio State was run over by unranked Purdue, 49-20. Number 12 Oregon fell to number 25 Washington State, 34-20. Number 20 Cincinnati fell to unranked Temple, 24-17. The eyebrow raisers, number 14 Kentucky, 14 unranked Vanderbilt, 7. Number 18 Penn State just squeaked by unranked Indiana, 33-28. Number 21, South Florida, with a 38-30 win over unranked UConn. All right, gentlemen, your analysis of the aforementioned games. We'll start with Will.
See, I watched a lot of that Ohio State-Purdue game, and sorry, Urban Meyer, you cannot delete that game. I've watched some Rondale Moore this year. I watched him play in the Boston College game and a couple other games, and man, he just looks like he's going to be a star player in the Big Ten, and I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be playing on Sundays in the near future. But Purdue's finally, they started off the season slow, but they finally hit fifth gear or sixth gear, and they're cruising. They're looking really good. Not surprised Oregon lost to Washington State. I mean, I thought it was going to be a little bit closer, like by like less than a score, but it's Washington State. Looks like this is their year to finally get some national respect, and winning against Oregon, a team that was ranked in the top 15 this week, is going to do wonders for that program. And we know Mike Leach has been around a long time. It just feels like one of his better teams he's had probably since that Texas Tech team he had Michael Crabtree with. Cincy and Temple, I was surprised. I knew Temple's been a pretty good team, but Cincinnati's always found ways to squeak out wins. And Temple, they're after Matt Rhule left to go to Baylor, it feels like this team has found another gem of a football coach. It's like they're finally starting to turn things around. Kentucky Vanderbilt, didn't watch this game. Doesn't surprise me. This was a low-scoring game because SEC football, and as many times people want to say, oh, it's so tough. No, it's nowhere near as good as everyone says. I think Kentucky's about to get exposed. Penn State and Indiana, doesn't surprise me. Indiana's a sneaky good team. We saw them beat Virginia in a monsoon earlier this year. Indiana's a pretty good team. They've got a good dual threat quarterback, but Penn State's just a better team. I'm shocked that South Florida and UConn was as close as it was. But then again, if you've watched any of South Florida this year, they've had a tendency to play to the level of their opponents. And UConn has one of the worst defenses. Nope, let me rephrase that. They have the worst defense in college football. They only gave up 38 points to South Florida, and that's 11 points less than any game this year. That tells you just how surprising this game was.
I'm interested in finding out Xavion's take specifically on the Pac-12. So, Xavion, start with that Ohio State game, and let's. My interest is peaked with the Pac-12 scores.
Well, the Ohio State game, I hate Ohio State. If I can put it in the easiest way possible, so
right,
I was
right along with Notre Dame.
Overjoyed. Yeah.
Okay. nobody faults you for that, man.
I was more than overjoyed to see that outcome, especially to Purdue. Not that Purdue isn't a quality team, but that's not the everyday team you'd expect to beat Ohio State. And in the way that they did, I mean, they won by 29 points. They took them to the woodshed and had their way with Ohio State and Urban Meyer. So that's always good to see. I was also surprised by the Oregon and Washington State game. I didn't think the final score doesn't bother me. I just didn't think how it played out, because I think it was 28-0 at halftime, all Washington State throughout the game. And I saw Washington State when they played USC, and that was a shootout. USC was able to come back and win that game, luckily. Don't want to talk about anything else about USC football right now, so don't ask.
Okay.
But Washington State, if I was to pick who would probably be leading in terms of a playoff picture, not that the Pac-12 really has many candidates, but Washington State would probably be my pick, because the way that they play, it's quick. They, like Mike Leach, will spread you out. Their running the football is really swing passes to the running backs and open space. I think his name is Gardner Minshew, the quarterback. Mm-hmm. He is the real deal. He's power. Yeah, he's come in and just been able to carry that team and not miss a beat. Because I think Luke Falk was the starter for like the last what seemed like 5 to 10 seasons. He left and they just threw in Gardner Minshew and he just continued rolling the train. Cincinnati and Temple. Sometimes stuff like this happens. It's college football. These are kids. I say this all the time, and you get these midseason lulls, and you kind of Temple. Who's Temple to us? We're ranked. We've been winning games. We've been doing our thing all season long, and then they come hit you in the mouth for four quarters, and you end up with the score and on losing end, kind of wondering what happened. The other games, I saw the last bit of the Penn State Indiana game. Indiana honestly threw that away. They probably should have won. They recovered the onside kick, had a timeout, and they were already near midfield. And then they give up a sack, and then the quarterback throws the stupid pass. And it was just they kind of gave Penn State the victory. And then the same with USF and UConn. They were able to squeak away with the win, but they've kind of, like Will said, played down to the competition throughout the season. And that's only going to last for so long, especially when, I mean, UConn is anything but a football school, a football program. So you can't have that going throughout the season. Expect to have a 10-win season, in my opinion. But it is what it is when it comes to college football.
Anybody on here other than me believe that Kentucky being ranked that high is a travesty?
Well, it's the SE. S-P-N-E-C.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, yeah, what Xavion said. Yeah, I don't think they're the 14th best team in the country or whatever.
No.
Penn State's ranked below them, and I'm sure Penn State would have been away with Kentucky.
Oh.
It's because they have the running back, Benny Snell, who I admit is a good running back, but they don't have much else.
Yeah.
It's because they're in the SEC. If they were in the ACC, that there probably wouldn't be a number in front of them.
I would agree with that Penn State comment. I think Penn State would just absolutely wipe the field with Kentucky. Let's take a look at the ACC. Couple of mission-critical games. But Xavion, let's go into our ACC schedule. Syracuse over North Carolina.
I have a quick question. Yeah. Did Eric Dungy get benched, or did he get knocked out of the game?
Well, you know, history says he got knocked out of the game because that's usually what happens.
Because I was watching I didn't get a chance to watch this game. I was out and about. But when I was watching the highlights, and all of a sudden I saw DeVito back there chucking and had that offense actually coming alive, I was wondering if Dungy had gotten benched or got injured, but it seemed like he got benched. But honestly, that was a phenomenal game. I was enjoying the highlights and trying to find the condensed game to watch that, because it seemed like there was a lot of play all over the field. And I'm starting to like what I see from North Carolina in terms of weapons that they have going forward.
Yeah.
Between Newsom and Ratliff Williams, and even the running back Antonio Williams, that's a nice little core. I mean, Elliott did his thing as well, but that's a nice core going forward. I don't know where they all stand in terms of eligibility, but if they're coming back next year, I would kind of bank on UNC doing a little bit better than what they have in recent memories, because that's a nice core of offensive talent.
I would be right there on board with you on that. If they're getting a lot of that back, and you know, that's something I haven't really looked at, just because UNC has sort of been off the radar football wise, but this is something we have to look closer at. Depending on who they have coming back, that team is going to be very competitive next season, especially as you say, if they bring that core back. Will, your thoughts on this double overtime game?
Well, while you guys were talking, I looked it up, and yes, Eric Dungy was benched in favor of Tommy DeVito.
Good choice, Dino.
Like that. Yeah. Feel like they made the right decision there in the game. But as far as, you know, North Carolina, they've played six games this year. Four of them have been decided by 7 points or less. Then I think they've only, and obviously one of them was the win against Pitt in the shootout. So really, with the way they've played, they could easily be a four-win team. You know, they could be 4-2 with one play going one way or the other. But you guys are right about North Carolina's offense. They have weapons, and they're all young. Nathan Elliott, I believe, he's still relatively young. I know Michael Carter's a sophomore. Elliott is a junior, so he will be back next year. Michael Carter, he had a really good game against Virginia Tech, but struggled in this game against Syracuse. Tony Williams, he did the bulk of the work. He's also a junior. Ratliff Williams, he's one of, I still say he's one of the better receivers in the league as a junior. So, I mean, they have the opportunity to, you know, be better next year, but it just feels like these are the only weapons this team has, and I don't feel like they can stop anybody, which is a big concern. Obviously, DeVito came in and performed admirably, you know, with Dungy's struggles. Syracuse ran the ball all right. I mean, Mo Neal did his thing with only 8 carries, but Syracuse might be best served at this point just being more, having Tommy DeVito as more of a pocket passer, just and using that, because they had really good receiving games from Jamal Custis and Nakeem Johnson, both had over 100 yards rushing. But I do feel bad for North Carolina, because they're probably better than the 1-5 record indicates, but they just keep finding ways to lose games. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
Yeah, it is. We'll stick with you, and we'll just kind of slide over to Chapel Hill, or from Chapel Hill over to Durham, and talk about this Virginia, which I read prior to going on to record the program that it was an upset, and I guess it was, but then again, I'm thinking, well, I picked the right team, so it can't be an upset. Virginia over Duke.
Well, in terms of point spread, it was an upset, I believe. Duke was a 6.5-point favorite at kickoff. Yeah,
true.
So, yeah, absolutely. It was an upset, but
it upset a lot of people's pockets.
Yeah, probably. But and Xavion and I, who both took Duke, but you know, go, feel free to rub it in, Jim. But
I won't. Too much.
It's weird. Like, Daniel Jones has had career struggles against Virginia. He struggled in this game through 2 picks. I think about a third of his career interceptions have happened against Virginia. Like, he had 5 of them 2 years ago, 2 last year, and then 2 this year. I think he's going to be excited never to play Virginia again.
Yeah, Cavalier curse.
Yeah, surprise. They could not get the run game going yesterday. The Virginia's defense, I think, is after that bye week, has really clamped down, because they allowed 13 points to Miami, now 14 to Duke. They would have with strong defense and a strong running game, because they had some strong running games. I know Bryce Perkins had 2 touchdown runs. Jordan Ellis was running well before he got injured. They relied on P.K. Kyer, who his stats didn't run well, but he was getting some tough yardage. We'll see what Ellis's injury is like, because I'm hoping it's not too severe. Special teams, again, was another big factor for Virginia. Brian Delaney did miss his first couple of field goals, but he rebounded nicely. And Tavares Kelly had a couple of really nice returns that set up good field position, and so did Chuck Davis. Telling you, you know, Virginia's 5-2. Their next 3 games are North Carolina at home, Pitt at home on a Friday night, and Liberty. I said this on Twitter yesterday. There is a chance Virginia goes into the last 2 games of the year with an 8-2 record, because there's a chance they could be favored in all 3 of those.
I don't think that's going over the line or stepping out on a branch that feels like it's going to be sawed off behind you. I think that's a very accurate view of where Virginia is headed. I think they have the momentum. I said this last week. It just feels like everything is coming together. Xavion, your thoughts on the Virginia-Duke game?
To kind of piggyback off what Will just said, I agree that they could be 8-2. The only concern I would have is maybe that Pitt game on a Friday night at home. Seems a little bit of a trap game to me, but this was a good game, great game, honestly, for UVA. They did everything essentially right on offense, and defense came through, made great stops, and led to Daniel Jones turning the ball over. But I'm looking at the stats, and I'm kind of confused why Daniel Jones had 15 carries, the leading rusher for your team, and didn't he break his collarbone or break something earlier in the season, and he's leading Clavicle. Your team in rushing attempts? Yeah, like that. Why would you? Why? He should, like, you have Daniel Jones had 15 carries, Deion Jackson 11, and Quentin Harris 1. Quentin Harris probably had 15, or Deion Jackson 15, and then either one of them having 11, and then Daniel Jones having 1. if your quarterback has been playing with an injury, to have him running the ball 15 times, and they only sack him twice, and I know college football throws in rushing attempts with sacks, but then still 13 attempts out of he was the leading carrier of the football, and he's running the football for you guys. That just doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, it's confusing. I never understand that. I'm sorry. I've always harped on this because for my understanding in the NFL, which is where everybody wants to be at one day, you never see a quarterback leading the carry. Quarterback is supposed to be the heart and soul of the offense, and you're putting your heart and soul of the offense constant danger by having him run the football.
Unless you're Michael Vick.
But Michael Vick was a diamond.
Yeah. He's a once-in-a-generation type player, though.
Yeah.
And the thing is Vick could do both. He could pass and he could run. And he was a true, threat. Lamar Jackson wasn't as much of a passing threat, even though he's a good passer. A lot of people discounted his ability to pass. And it's because they weren't utilizing it. And, of course, they didn't have a lot of good receivers at first. But that last season that Jackson was there, they had some good receivers. And yet they didn't use his arm effectively. Which just, I guess they figure, well, we got a winning thing here. Let's just go with it. With Daniel Jones, I agree with you, Xavier. I scratch my head over why do you keep pushing this kid in this situation? Now, he's a big guy, but why would you put him in a situation where he's potentially going to break something again? Because I don't care how quickly he came back, he's not like some kind of superhuman. He can break something very easily. It's scary. And it just really makes me wonder about how Cutcliffe has utilized Jones while he's been at Duke. Let's move on to our next game, Xavion. Florida State over Wake Forest. I wasn't overly surprised by the outcome of this game, but I am disappointed in the direction that Wake Forest has taken.
I'm right there with you. I expected Florida State to win this game, but it's just the way that they won it left more to be desired from Wake Forest. Just turning the ball over. I don't know. Wake Forest kind of started off the season as like a hopeful, expecting team to kind of do some damage and make some noise, but it's been the complete opposite. They dropped to 0-3 in a conference, 3-4 on the season, and it's not looking. There's nothing really to be hopeful for. It looks like they don't seem to have anything like you saw how we were looking at North Carolina and say this team has potential next year with these weapons and this coming back. I kind of don't feel the same like that when it comes to Wake Forest. It was a great game for Florida State. The only thing I kind of noticed is Francois was throwing the ball. He had a great game in terms of numbers-wise, but the ball didn't seem like it had enough lift because he missed Murray on a couple throws that he had to come back to and ended up like going out of bounds. But if he threw it out in front of him, had him running underneath it, he easily could have had another couple touchdowns and more yards and stuff like that. I'm not sure if Florida State still has got over 100 yards rushing from an individual rusher, but Cam Akers got damn close and finally kind of had a breakout game for this season, in my opinion. So it's a good win, and hopefully it helps Florida State turn around their season. They have Clemson next week, so that might – oh, wow. They have Clemson, North Carolina State, and Notre Dame, and Boston College, and Florida. Oh, man. I take back what I said.
Now you're backpedaling.
No, because I was in the midst of saying that. I was like, let me check real quick to see. And I was like, okay, Clemson, that's a loss. NC State, it depends. Notre Dame, that's going to be a loss. Boston College, maybe. In Florida?
No.
Yeah, so they could easily, they might not be above 500 near season end and definitely probably missing the bowl.
Yeah, this is going to be a hard one to swallow.
Oh, man.
rough season. Will?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Florida State got to 38, but I thought Wake would get more than 17, but Does it kind of tell you just how bad things have gotten for Wake Forest? Remember how we've talked throughout the season about how just bad Florida State's offensive line has been? They did not get any sacks against FSU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, this is the kind of game they needed, though, that Florida State needed.
Hey, good thing they got rid of that defensive coordinator at Wake Forest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really paid dividends. You know, no sacks. Allowed Yantre Francois to throw for 353 yards and two touchdowns and basically had the best game of the season. And, you know, you almost want to take the D's out of Demon Deacons. Just call them the Eamon Eakins.
I'm not sure what that means, Will.
They don't deserve it because there's no defense.
The devil's in the details, right?
or in this case, the evil.
Uh-oh.
Okay. But anyway, Sam Hartman struggled. He got benched for Jamie Newman, and he did okay. But this I agree with Xavion. It looked like Wake started off the season really well. Looked like, hey, maybe they could be a little bit of a sleeper team. But nope, their defense got exposed, and they've just tanked.
Doof. Yeah, in an ugly way. Coming up this week, two early games, Thursday and Friday. On Thursday, it's Georgia Tech at Virginia Tech. That should be interesting. On Friday, Miami at Boston College. Another entertaining game. So we'll start out with Xavion talking about, we're not going to get into that. I'm sorry, I skipped over something, didn't I?
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, gee, where's Clemson, NC State?
How could I have missed an important game like that? Okay.
I think NC State fans would rather us skip over it.
Not this time. Hey, Will, let's go into the Clemson and NC State game.
I have no idea what happened to Ryan Finley yesterday. He even with the extra week to prepare, he just came out and looked bad.
Let me throw this in. Because this is an observation that I made yesterday watching that game. I said, you know, one of the things in the NFL is the players always talk about that first year, that adjustment, the speed adjustment, going from college speed to NFL speed. And, you know, it's going from a collection of players to the elite group of players. So everything speeds up when you get to the NFL. There are two teams that I see right now that are playing at NFL level, for the most part, speed-wise, in college football. Two of them, Alabama, the other is Clemson. I watched that game, Will, and I watched Ryan Finley in the execution of the offense for NC State, and I was like, God, it's like watching something that's in slow motion compared to the way the Clemson defense was attacking. And it was the same way as Trevor Lawrence was marshaling the team downfield. It was like NC State's defense was in slow motion. Take that thought and mix it in with what you were getting ready to say about Ryan Finley.
Well, I'll add to it, in fairness, it felt like it wasn't completely all his fault because there was a play. I think Clemson was a 14-0. I want to say at this point, and Finley had Kelvin Harmon wide open and probably would have scored, but he just flat out dropped it, and I think they either punted or turned it over some, but they obviously didn't score. But that felt like that was a momentum killer right there. It just felt like every time NC State had the opportunity early on to get back into the game, they would either turn it over or they'd have a bad drop. And it just, in Clemson, it was always there to capitalize. And I will say, though, it felt like NC State's game plan was to contain Travis Etienne and make the freshman Lawrence beat him. Well, they did. They did stop ATN because he only had 39 success. Yards.
They succeeded.
But they didn't stop Trevor Lawrence, though.
Nope.
This is why I think Trevor Lawrence, you know, deserved the start. You know, when he did, he had a great game.
So Xavion, wow, Clemson over NC State.
NC State didn't do anything to help. They had a couple of turnovers on, I think, their own side of the field, which gave short scores and a lot of short scoring opportunities for Clemson. to get out to a nice lead. Finley just looked kind of lost out there throughout the game. Like you said, the speed, there's a play action, and before he even turned around, there's a defender right in his face from Clemson about to smack him in the mouth. Then this fumbled snap they had, and he, from the angle, it looked like he had recovered it. Then they started a different camera angle, and he was nowhere near that football. And then I think it was 24-0, and for some odd reason, they decided to run a reverse punt to catch Clemson off guard. And I was like, that was the ugliest, the slowest, the most, I have no idea why you would call that in the world at that time play I've seen.
And they were like, and they were at their like own 20 or 25 or something like that.
Yeah, it was like, did you guys want to potentially win this game or make it close? Did you want to cover the spread maybe? Like, did you want to do that? But
I would have been clearly fine with that,
not. But... Yeah, it was. I was just confused by what I was watching from North Carolina State, and it just made Clemson did well, but they didn't have to really work that hard to do what they had to do. I mean, if you look at the stats, yeah, Travis Etienne had 3 touchdowns, but they really couldn't run the football. They averaged 2.8 yards a carry. Lawrence did well, but he only threw 1 touchdown pass. It wasn't like he was lighting it up. The receivers, I mean, the receiving, he has a hell of a cast to throw to, Lawrence does, so that definitely helps those yards. But like I said, North Carolina State just kind of handed the ball to Clemson and said, let's see how many points you guys can score on us, and if you stay under 50, I guess we win the day.
Wow. That's an interesting take. Ooh, well, division battle-wise, I guess we can say the Atlantic is all wrapped up now. It's Clemson. Yeah. The Coastal is a whole different ballgame. We've got 3 teams that are battling out here. And, Will, you had a tweet.
I saw that this morning, actually.
Yeah, it was interesting. We've got 3 teams there. You want to kind of look at that a little bit from the standpoint of that tweet that you had earlier?
Sure. You look at, I think there was a tweet, I forget, I think it was Dan Wolk, and he said that he thought Virginia was the favorite in the Coastal. And I said that there is no singular favorite team in the Coastal. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was between both Virginia schools and Miami. If you look at Virginia Tech, we're going to get into their upcoming game this week, but they also have Boston College, and they have Miami. Yeah, 4 of the final 5 games are at home, so that really helps them. But like I said, they still have Boston College. They have to face Georgia Tech, the triple option, this week. You know, Miami's always a tough game. Virginia's been one of the surprises of college football this year. And we talk about Virginia, and I mentioned earlier they have 3 home games in a row, plus they close out the season at Georgia Tech and at Virginia Tech. Georgia Tech, who knows? Virginia Tech, or they've been so up and down this year that we don't know what to get from one week to the next. Miami is the team that, they have Boston College as well, but say they also travel to Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. Those are very losable. So I think right now it's a 3-team race. Talk to me in a week when because I think it could very well be a 2-team race between the Virginia schools. I could see Miami getting pushed aside here very soon.
Virginia Tech, Virginia, Miami, that's the way it lines up right now, 3 teams. So that's something to keep an eye on. If somebody were to ask me today, who would I pick in the Commonwealth Cup game? I'd say, throw out every bit of history, because it doesn't tell you a thing. What you need to be looking at is the week of that game, how these teams have progressed or regressed, and who has the momentum. And that's going to tell you a lot. And I would not go near picking that game until the actual week of. Right now, I would say that if you're a Hokies fan, you may have something to worry about.
Yep.
I'll just leave it at that. Let's look at these 2 early games that we have this week, Thursday and Friday, Georgia Tech at Virginia Tech. And this is, believe it or not, this is a key matchup, as is this Friday game, Miami at Boston College. These are 2 critical games. Xavion, Georgia Tech at Virginia Tech.
Both these games for me are going to honestly be coin tosses. But as of now, I would probably pick Virginia Tech because – I mean, they both have had the week off to kind of extra prepare and focus on one another. But Georgia Tech is one-dimensional. So, essentially, if you can stop the run game or contain it the best of your ability and kind of force them to pass more than five times, you kind of have the upper hand against Georgia Tech, in my opinion. So I expect the Hokies to kind of buckle down and contain that run game for Georgia Tech.
It'll be interesting. Will, your thoughts on that matchup?
The best thing any team can have when facing Georgia Tech is an extra week to prepare. And since this game is also in Blacksburg, I like the Hokies as well.
That option it befuddles a lot of defenses, and with good reason. That's part of the reason why Paul Johnson runs it. It's effective. But if you have that extra time, as you guys point out, to prepare, sometimes that's all it takes. Friday, Miami at Boston College. Man, wow. This is going to be interesting. Will?
Yeah, this game has gotten a lot more interesting when you see what Miami is coming off of. We've established their quarterback situation as a lot more of a mess than we expected. And now Malik Rozier is going to be starting. I think this is a contingency. If A.J. Dillon is healthy and back in this game, I'm taking Boston College in somewhat of a mini upset. I feel like they're going to be able to run the football very well. And I on the road on a Friday night game, I just really like the Eagles in this one.
Xavion, your thoughts on Miami and Boston College?
Literally everything Will just said. I had a couple questions. I was wondering who's starting for Miami.
Mm-hmm.
He answered that. And then it's Boston College's victory was really dependent on if A.J. Dillon is playing and healthy. If he is playing, then I'm picking Boston College because I don't have much faith in Miami on the road, on like he said, on a Friday night.
Oh, let me add in this too as well. I believe this is the traditional red bandana game for Boston College, and they are always up for this game. If you don't know what I'm talking about, search up the Boston College red bandana game because it's traced back to the 9/11 attacks, and this is something that Boston College has done the last few years.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely that's a butt whooping waiting to happen for Miami. Anytime they have a team has extra incentive to go out there and play hard, it's difficult.
Yeah, pretty much says everything, doesn't it? Here's something that a lot of people may not have thought about is that there is a weather factor here. It's not going to be like really cold, but cold temperatures, not something that the Miami players are used to. The high is only going to be 52 right now. And it's calling
that's going to be freezing for them.
Yeah, calling for partly sunny skies and 52. Now, here's the thing. Anybody familiar with Boston knows there's a nice, healthy breeze coming in, and that is that's going to be a factor. In my mind, it is. So we'll see where that goes. You can find out how all of us think this coming Saturday's lineup is going to go, how those games are going to end up in our picks. That's coming up at accnation.net. Our picks, and we've got Wake Forest at Louisville, North Carolina at Virginia, Duke at Pitt, Clemson at Florida State, and NC State at Syracuse. It'll be interesting to see how we all select those games and where we go. Now, the folks at KenPom.com have stirred the college basketball world with their release of the first Pomeroy college basketball ratings. Guess what, folks? The ACC looks daunting. Here are the top five teams: Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, Villanova. Reactions on this overall top five. We'll start with Xavion.
Yeah, when I saw that, my eyes kind of were surprised. Three out of the top five teams are from the ACC. I'm also surprised. I mean, Duke, based off what they brought in youth-wise, hell of a recruiting class. I'm surprised they just outright the number one team. But it's definitely going to be, I mean, as we get through the rest of the list and the other top 25, it's going to be competitive through and throughout, I think, in the ACC.
Yeah, tough season ahead for a lot of people. Will?
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the ACC looks to be the conference to beat again this season. But with the way the metrics stand out here, it is a little surprising how things have set up. I thought Kentucky would be no worse than second on this list, but they're down at number seven, which, yeah, I thought they're going to be, I think they're one of 3 to 4 teams that have a shot at the national title this year. And I really wonder what the reasoning is behind that. But Yeah, it doesn't surprise me Duke is up there. Kansas is my early season favorite to win the title anyways, but obviously this is all dependent on what's going on with the FBI investigation. I don't think anything's going to come of it, but Duke with their with all their freshmen, I mean, yeah, I get the number two. They have a lot of talent, but we don't know what they're going to be like as a team yet. UNC, they have a good mix of youth and veterans on that team. Virginia is I mean, their starting five is going to be one of the best in the league. They have depth questions, which should be answered early on.
Let's take a look at the other ACC teams in the top 25 of the Pomeroy ratings. Syracuse, Clemson, Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech. And Will, we'll stick with you on that in your thoughts on that, how those teams kind of line up.
I'm kind of glad Syracuse is high on Ken Pom's list because I think they could be a sleeper team, and I think a lot of it has to do just because they have another year of Tyus Battle and Frank Howard and the big man in the middle who I can't pronounce his name right now because it's too early, but they're my sleeper team in the league because I think they're going to have a good mix of shooting and that 2-3 zone with them in the middle. I think they're going to be a dangerous team. Clemson, I think, is overrated along with Miami. I have a feeling Clemson is going to be stepping back a little bit. I think a lot of this is because of what happened in the NCAA tournament last year, which, you know, a lot of weird things happened that first weekend. I don't want to think about it too much, to
no
be
memories.
Honest with you.
No memories. Virginia Tech.
Sorry, I just got reminded. Sorry.
Okay.
I try to delete that. And Virginia Tech, I actually think, is underrated on here. I think they're a team that could be at least it should be probably, I think, maybe the fifth best team in the league this year. They're going to be shooting the ball like a lot. They're going to do a lot, shooting a lot of threes. But then again, we don't know how good this team is going to be. Here's their December schedule in terms of KenPom rankings: 304, 305, 348, 46, which is Washington on a neutral court, 346, and 339. So they're basically playing three HBCU schools, VMI and Central Connecticut, along with Washington on a neutral.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is they're going to be putting up astronomical point totals, but we don't know how good they're going to be really until they get to league play.
It's all a tune-up, man. All a tune-up. All right, Xavion, your thoughts on these other teams in the top 25?
I think for the conference overall, it makes kind of, if you're an ACC fan, to be excited for the upcoming season, because then based off these rankings, you would expect that even the top five teams, Duke, North Carolina, and UVA, they don't have an opportunity to really, when it comes to conference play, take a night off. But like Will said, there's definitely some teams that can be viewed as kind of being overrated and then some teams being underrated. I agree Clemson. I agree with Miami being overrated. They lost a lot. And then there's teams that, like you said, Virginia Tech has definitely been trending over the last couple of years forward, but they've been trending in the upward direction. I expect that to continue. Then you even go further down the list, and because I know the tournament's 64 teams, and out of the 64 teams on this list, 11 are from the ACC. So it bodes well for the conference being essentially competitive through and throughout. Now, not all these teams, I'm sure, are going to make it, but it's going to boding well for some of the top quality teams and whatnot in terms when it comes to the postseason, where we don't have a repeat of what happened with some teams in the tournament and stuff last year. I expect it to be a deep conference to really be on display in terms of it coming to tournament time.
Here are the teams that I think that should be in there, and not in any particular order. I'm just kind of following the list we have here. Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, Syracuse, Florida State, and Virginia Tech. Those teams are the ones I think should be in that top 25 ratings for Ken Pom. I'm not sold on Clemson. I'm not sold on Miami as well, guys, and with good reason. They're gonna have to earn their way in there this year, much like they have in the past, and hopefully, you know, show something to stay in there. You can check out how everyone in the ACC looks, and some of that is not pretty. There are a couple of teams that just, oof, you're not going to be happy. I don't think they're going to stay that low. as the season progresses. And I think one of them is Pitt, actually.
Yep.
I don't see them staying that low. There's just no way. I'm sorry.
They're going to be better this year. Yeah. I know that for a fact. But yeah. Because obviously Capel's doing a great job of recruiting, but to what extent could they, you know, I don't think, yeah, they're not going to go, I don't think they're going 0-18 in the league again this year.
No, not at all. No, I don't see that happening at all. We're going to have more on that Ken Palm story at accnation.net. You can check that out. Hey, coming up, Brian Koppel will be joining us on a regular basis to talk about basketball as the season gets underway, plus special guest to talk hoops and other sports are just around the corner as well. Be sure to check out the guys on Twitter. Will is at WillsWorldMN. Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. You can look for us on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation. On Facebook, it's ACC Nation Sports. Until next time.